Now the time is here. Now's the time for a bite of cheer. A tasty light where the price is right. Well, look here, you'll dig this sight. The moment's handy for a piece of candy. Just name your brand, they're all so grand. Hey, what do you think of an ice cool drink? Or a big box filled with a popcorn thrill?
Hello, welcome to the Boozy Floozies for Movies podcast. The podcast where three friends watch movies. I'm Alana.
I'm Tim.
I'm Brandon. What an intro, Alana. Yeah.
Holy shit. I told you I had my intro. I didn't need to write it down.
How long did you plan that? That was a good one.
It was a good one.
Holy shit. Anyway, after that, it's been a while, guys, huh?
No, it hasn't been that long. Check us out on our socials, Instagram and Facebook, Boozy Floozies for Movies.
That's right. Drop us a line, please. Let us know what you like or don't like about us.
Or drop us a line.
Something. Yeah, it feels like it's been a while, but it's been a couple of weeks. Our last outing was Valentine's Day.
Oh. And it's almost St. Patrick's Day.
It's almost St. Patrick's Day now. We're not going with a theme.
No.
We're not going with it. You sure you guys don't want to watch all how many leprechauns are there?
I hate them.
Yes. I would love to. I don't think you want to sign yourself up.
I don't think I could handle that. No.
That's a brutal franchise. But so we have any different thoughts about our last movie, Along Came Polly?
Do you, Tim?
A little, but not much more.
Do you want to think about your score for Along Came Polly?
No, you know what? Maybe I'll raise it a point, but it still gets a half for me, which is 5 out of 10. It's mediocre. I wanted it to be better, and any movie where the two main characters are the least interesting ones in the fucking movie, that's not something that you want to see in a rom-com. So, 5. Like Cocaine Bear, it could have been more in what it was and what you wanted it to be.
He's dropping. Yeah, we did see Cocaine Bear, the three of us.
Yes.
It's only in the theater right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or illegally.
There was 5 of us.
Oh, okay. But not streaming yet, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, we went with a bunch of friends, and we all saw it, and not that we can. We're not doing a review on this, but yeah, 5 out of 10 on that one, too.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of hype behind it.
I'd go a little bit higher on that one. I went in with low expectations, and I thought it was pretty funny, and the gore was pretty awesome. CGI was CGI.
Right.
It was good CGI. It
would have been nice if there was a real bear here and there in some of the scenes, yeah. But there wasn't.
I mean, I've never seen a movie where kids did cocaine of some sort.
Yeah, that was
so
great.
Like little kids.
Sorry, we watched kids, weren't they doing?
Yeah. But I would give it a 7 out of 10 if I was gonna.
Oh wow.
Oh wow. That's
2 points more than you. What do you give it, Alana?
Oh, probably a 6 actually. See? Yeah. I don't know. Little no above problems. Average just for, like, you know, humor content, but...
I just think for a movie called Cocaine Bear, they held back on some things that I'm like, the movie's about called Cocaine Bear. You should go all out like you are on cocaine.
Right, right. Hell yeah.
Amen, brother.
I didn't. Oh, gosh. What was I going to say?
Along Came Polly.
No. Oh, 2 days after we did the podcast, so I did appreciate Tim's text in our group when someone asked me who my favorite basketball player is. And it's Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was great. He's the best part of that movie.
No doubt. So before we start, I just want to apologize for our accents throughout the rest of this podcast, because we are going to, I think it's going to be nonstop.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, hon.
Darn tootin'. Darn tootin', hon.
I thought you were going to apologize that this is the 4th movie of yours that we've watched.
No.
You should definitely apologize.
Oh, no. I'm on a roll. I'm happy with all of this.
I'm going to cook you and put you on a roll because.
Yeah,
it's
I just.
Control.
Cook you and put you on a roll.
That's putting her on a roll.
Holy shit.
Elapsed a roll?
So, why are we using. Why will this be an accent filled podcast alone?
Well, if you don't already know what the title of this podcast is, I went ahead and picked Fargo this week.
Oh, Fargo.
What year did Fargo come out?
1996, Tim.
How old were you in 1996?
13.
Yeah. 12.
Yeah.
12.
Same. I picked this, obviously. I had seen this before. Only once before. Have you guys seen Fargo?
Yes, a long time ago. To the point where I remembered certain things. There's certain things, if you see this movie, stick with you. If you would have said to me, what's the story of Fargo? I had no idea. I honestly totally forgot. I remembered who was in it. And I remembered a lot of the accents.
Sure.
Yeah, but that's that. What about you, Brandon?
I thought my whole life, oh yeah, I've seen Fargo. Yeah, Fargo. Who hasn't seen Fargo, right? Never fucking seen this movie.
Why did you think you ever saw this?
I don't know. I think I've seen scenes from the movie. Like, obviously.
So you convinced yourself that you saw the whole movie?
It's like a Mandela thing. Mandela effect.
I know. Brandon does a thing, and I don't know if you guys noticed this from the podcast, but he fakes it till he makes it. And this was a time where I think he faked himself out.
Yeah, no. I've seen scenes. Like, of course, the infamous wood chipper scene, right?
Uh-huh.
We've all seen that.
No, where would you have seen that? Because it's really gory.
No,
Oh, it just reminded me of an ice cone.
On the internet, on like... maybe. Like when I've seen so many of those, like, you know, craziest moments in movies kind of thing. Like those countdowns, you know, bullshit like that. You know, you see stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I guess I've never seen this.
Wow.
It's crazy.
But you had convinced yourself that you had.
Apparently. And it's weird because I enjoy the Coen brothers. I don't enjoy all their movies. Some of them are fucking...
Yeah, they're like off the rail too much. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I love Raising Arizona. Is fucking hilarious. Big Lebowski, of course, huge. No Country for Old Men, also awesome.
That's a Coen Brothers film.
But then some of their, you know, then they got other movies like, you know, The Lady Killers, which I've never actually seen. We talked about it on one of the other podcasts, and that's what Tom Hanks' one villain role in a movie or one of his few. But they've, you know. Hudsucker Proxy, Barton Fink.
And like, I haven't seen any. The only other one that you mentioned that I've seen, two, are Big Lebowski and No Country. So I'm not a huge Coen Brothers guy. I don't love the Big Lebowski like our whole generation does.
I don't disagree with that, yeah.
It's not my favorite. It's fine, and there's funny parts in it, but when I first time, it's just not my favorite. And then No Country, great movie, whatever. It's also one of those movies that you either love or hate because of the ending. But for every other movie you said, like, I've never seen Raising Arizona. No, I've heard a lot. We should probably do it for the podcast.
Yeah.
And even this, Fargo was... I knew the name Fargo before I knew the movie. and it's now a TV show.
I don't know if this show is still going. I think it's like the
fourth, fifth season or something. Mm,
yeah. And I haven't watched any of that. No.
I think it's still going. I don't think they've... It's
oh, really?
Chris Rock is in it. Like, oh, okay. I know he's in the last season.
Yeah, but I don't think, from what I've heard, it doesn't... It's completely different characters. Yeah. It doesn't follow the movie at all in any way.
So why'd you pick this movie?
I picked this movie because it's... For its time, it's very distinctive. The biggest...
When did it come out again?
I don't know.
It's 1996. But, like, there's not a lot of big, big Hollywood films where they focus on the Midwest. No. Or, like, the mundaneness of the Midwest. And the way that they portrayed the characters in this, somehow there was a wonderful endearingness about the most boring of conversations in this. Yeah. So, it's a slow-paced film, but still keeps you... intrigued the entire time as you're watching it. Right. Even the way the storyline goes is a little slow, but in a good way. Yeah. That it kind of explains everybody and why each character is in the movie for that specific reason.
I agree. There is something even just about them, Francis McDermott is a cop here investigating this brutal murder, accidental murder that's happening. And even on those phone calls, like, you don't hear what's happening on the other end, but it's probably something like, triple homicide coming down and check it out. She's like, oh, dear. Oh, I just sounded like a leprechaun. Yeah, it is St. Patty's Day. But she's like, geez, wow. Okay, be right there. Like, oh, she's okay. Very, there's, like, how do they get excited? Like, you, that's probably why, like, how many Minnesota teams ever did win any games? But can you imagine the stadium to be like, cheers?
Oh, that was a darn good game.
Darn tilting, guys.
Well, it's funny because she's the chief, right? I think is what.
Yeah.
So she's the chief of the police department. So she's probably heard and seen so much bullshit in her time.
Right.
And I think also, like, she's pregnant in during the movie. So, I think she's just so tired that I don't think she. Also, she's very like just kind of whatever about stuff.
She doesn't seem tired to me. She eats the whole time. Every time it's like these scenes where she's just eating. She seems more hungry than tired.
I think you're trying to say she's tired of the bullshit, right?
Yeah,
but I don't even know.
I think she's just tired of like the everyday monotonous bullshit.
Maybe.
But how many murders happen in
Fargo?
In what's the town?
Burkhead or
Brainerd.
Brainerd. How many murders are there in Brainerd?
And it also seems like there's such small. So not to get to the end of this movie, but after everything is resolved, she kind of says something to like one of the bad guys, and she's like, all this over money, jeez. And then goes home and cuddles her husband and is like, I love you. And that's how it ends. Where she's just like, well, I just had this whole thing, but small town living, back to it. Right?
Yeah. And it's so, like, should we explain the plot? It actually is not a complicated plot.
No, it's very simple. Plot.
And it's actually kind of wild because you would think that with a state trooper being involved in as one of the dead bodies, that it would be a bigger deal than it was. But
yeah, no one seems to
know. No, not at all.
So go ahead. What's the plot of this movie?
So the basis of the film is basically William H. Macy. What's his character's name?
I don't know.
Jerry? Is it Jerry Lundeberg or whatever?
It's like Bundaberg.
I don't think it matters that
much. I think his name was Jerry, but Jerry.
Jerry Lundegaard.
Lundegaard. Okay, so Jerry. Hires these guys to kidnap his wife, not murder her, kidnap her for ransom, first scene, and hires these two guys that he got their number from one of the mechanics at the dealership that he works for.
Mm-hmm. Native American guy.
Uh-huh. And yeah, mm-hmm. So it doesn't say Shep very Cowfoot. Much. Yeah. Very, talks like a chief would, right? Yeah. No. Like, just simple word answers. And then everything prevails from there. Why then the shit show kind of begins.
Did you just say, like, to kidnap, but to also get the money, right?
Yeah, for ransom.
And they're going to split it.
And they're going to split the ransom, so we both work out.
And but Steve Buscemi asks him, what are you doing this for? And he goes, oh, well, I got my reasons. Right.
What are his reasons?
So he was pocketing money from the dealership and was trying to get his father-in-law to pay the ransom, and then he'd be able to get the ransom money and pay off, you know, all these cars. That's what I didn't understand, was the seal coat thing and how he was like, so he was saying that he was selling cars that he wasn't actually selling. And that's how he was getting the financing money and taking it himself, right?
Right.
Okay. And then the snowball effect happens of mistakes and blunders and murders. And,
yes.
So this movie has, it seems like a big cast, but it's really a small, there's William H. Macy's character, there's the two thugs, Buscemi and Peter Stormare.
Stormare.
There's Marge the cop, and then there's like small characters around them.
And the father-in-law.
Plays a big. Yeah, you're right. But my two favorites in this movie, just for the record right now, are the two, Steve Buscemi and Peter, because they are not from there. They don't have that accent.
No.
I don't really, they're just thugs, but I don't really know what they do. Like, they're just thugs for hire, because they're not assassins, and they're very bad at their job.
Well, no, the other one's not. not Steve Buscemi's kind of sloppy, but and I, it doesn't seem like they had originally worked together. That this was the first time they had worked together, so they didn't know each other very well.
They don't know each other very well, but yet they have no problem fucking next to each other in beds.
Which you guys haven't had that? So never had that in your life?
Alana, you would have been in that room if that was the case.
And I would have been peeking. But that scene is funny. It doesn't, I mean, they're good, but they're not like, they'll also shoot people in wide open areas and like, oh, someone else could have saw this. Leaving their numbers everywhere. Driving a car with a kidnapped body with no license plates on the car.
Right.
Like, that should be your first step.
Well, I thought they had a dealer tag, but I think that's why I pulled them over. Oh, okay.
Because he says, oh, I forgot to put the tags on.
Oh, gotcha. But yeah, they get pulled over, and then, you know, the cop that pulls them over is just more collateral damage than anything else.
Well, they try to bribe the cop. Steve Buscemi's like, here's my information. He literally has a 50 hanging out of it. And he's like, can we just figure this out? And then the cop, being a Midwest kind of cop, was just like, step out of the car. And then he gets... So this... I did see this before, like I said. I forgot how gory this movie gets when it gets
over. Oh, yeah.
It's extremely blood. Awesome. He shoots the cop in the head and it's a geyser of blood. Like, it's like a fire, like a hose.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've ever popped a blackhead, that's what his head was.
Shit. It was wild.
But yeah, Peter Stormare just opens the glove box, reaches across his...
He didn't give a fuck.
He is so ruthless in this movie.
He is a no-nonsense killer for sure.
He's one of my favorite character actors. Like, if I ever ran into him on the street, like, I you know...
You need a picture.
I would be like, I need to get a picture with you.
I don't... What is that scene? Because I mean, he looks familiar, but I can't...
Oh, my God. He's been in so... I think other than this, Big Lebowski, of course.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I fell in love with him in Big Lebowski. But then when he was in Armageddon... He plays the Russian space station guy. And oh my God, he's
That's right. He's crazy because
he's living on a space station by himself. So he's just like a goofy, wacky dude. And I think that's where I liked him in Big Lebowski. But when I saw him in Armageddon, I like fell in love. I'm like, this guy is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
He's been in so many, things like Wind Talkers, Minority Report, Spun, The Tuxedo. Like
he's just a really good character actor.
He's been in so many different
Bad Boys
things.
2 is how I Bad Boys
Nacho Libre. He's been in so many different things.
So if you were to categorize this movie and say it is a thriller, drama, what is this?
It's a drama.
Black comedy.
I say a dark comedy. That was going to be my next point.
Not as in Chris Rock.
Yes,
but
dark comedy.
Dark comedy.
Because Tyler Perry.
It has this drama feel to it, like a crime drama, but we are laughing the whole time, and there's very funny parts. Funny.
Yeah.
And it's not supposed to be, I mean, it's supposed to be funny, but, like, they're going to a murder, and these things happen.
The dryness in the entire movie is what keeps you giggling the entire time.
Right.
I think this is for sure a comedy. It's meant to be. It's not like we're laughing at scene. We make fun of their accents, but that's not what we weren't laughing.
Oh, were you offended at all by that? Too?
No, not this. Not today. I knew you were gonna say this. In my notes here, I have all this, and I just capitals, underlined, exclamation points, the accents, because they are wild. Like, it's almost like if I was in this movie and putting on that accent, I'd be like, you're going too hard with the accent. Uh-huh. You are. But if you, this is real life, right? I mean, I've never been.
I've never been there, to but Minnesota.
I've been to Minnesota, and
I've met people that have the accent.
An extreme version?
Yeah, is this like a character?
I think it's a little over the top. But in general, no. I think it's pretty spot on.
See, and that's wild to me because they are like simpletons in the simplest sense,
right? Or in the most extreme way.
Yeah, in the most
extreme. So my favorite moments were when they interviewed people. The interview ease were the best. When they were telling their story. Oh, yeah, he just came in and... he's a funny-looking fella. Well, funny in what kind of way? Oh, I don't know. Just funny-looking fella.
Yeah, it's funny-looking.
There's two different... That comes up a few different times.
It does.
Yeah, because they interview...
funny-looking
So, I was just looking on the back of the Blu-ray here, and... Frances McDermott won Best Actress for this.
Oscar
for Best Actress, which is crazy. Uh-huh. William H. Macy was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. It won Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah.
Which is great. I watch this and I don't get Oscar vibes from it.
Oh.
And I don't look at her and be like, oh man, she killed that acting wise. She did a good job. So maybe that's why.
I guess you'd have to compare it to what else. To what else was out
that
year.
I'm not saying that she didn't kill it, but at her character is an incredible detective. Figuring all this shit out by just following the... Well, I say she's an incredible detective, but they are terrible thugs. Because blood everywhere. Footprints. It's the snow. They run out and gun people down. And instead of just moving your footprints out of there, they leave their footprints there, right? Those are things that you would think to do. Yeah, I would anyway.
But that's what was funny is it seemed like she was the smartest one to notice that, where everyone was like, oh, yeah, huh? Like, didn't even see it.
Oh, well, I guess you're right. It's footprints.
And she was the sharpest tool in that shed, anyway.
She was, and I think that's why she's working this late in her pregnancy. She looks pretty pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, she's at the end. They said 2 months. She was seven months pregnant, still working.
God damn.
It's such an odd... It makes me think, the more I'm seeing it, and it's like a movie, right? It's like, here's this picture of this that you're watching, and then there's a lot of underlying things going on here. The middle of nowhereness of it, the simpleness of it versus... They almost seem stupid. They are not stupid people.
Right.
But because they are so simple and the way they talk and everything, it makes them seem stupid. But that's just what they like. They want the simple life. They don't want anything more.
Yeah.
Get that shit out of here.
But that's... even in the way that when they interviewed people around town, mm-hmm. they were like, oh, it definitely seemed out of place. You know when things don't feel right, right?
Yeah, you
like
know that
was the whole idea was, it wasn't just her. Everybody else was kind of like, well, then I put two and two together and I said, oh, there were those murders. And then these guys show up. I've never seen them before. So it was just like this dumb way of solving the crime without really having to do that much work.
And a lack of getting mad at somebody. Like, so she's interviewing people. They're not giving her any information. She's like, oh, okay. And even when she interviews William H. Macy at a certain point, and he's snapping at her, like,
oh yeah,
and she's just like, "Don't get like that with me. I'm just talking to you." And it's like she does not get mad once in this movie. Even when that's the maddest she gets is when she finally catches William Stormare, and she's just like all over money, and like that's as mad as she gets because you know she's pissed off about it.
So the interesting thing that I noticed, and it wasn't actually until the end of the film that I noticed that dynamic, was her and her husband, he would tell...
Ate the whole time?
Huh?
Yeah.
Ate the whole time.
Well, he brought her food. She's pregnant. What a nice guy.
She's pregnant and he's fat, so they're just eating equal.
But every scene, she's asking him about him, and then he has even a... far more simpler day than she certainly has, and she doesn't say anything about her day to him and says, well, you know what, I think you did a great job. Like, all of it, did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
In the two scenes where they actually had a conversation, in her status as what she was, it really was about pleasing her husband still at the end of the day.
That's how it should be.
What?
What?
Also, a lot of people in that kind of role, they don't want to talk about their job when they're done with the day,
uh-huh.
right? Like, if you if you saw murders every day, I don't know. It's like being in the army and seeing shit at war. It's like most cops aren't going to come in and be like...
You don't
want
to come home and tell your wife or spouse about it. Yeah,
because it's also... And they don't like... It's not something you want to talk about. Right. So how was your day?
I'd rather focus on your day. Is that just work in general? You come and you're like, I did my day. I don't want to talk about it.
Depends.
Tell me something else.
I don't like talking about my day unless something really irritated me or bothered me.
Yeah.
That I need to get off my chest because no one at work is going to listen to me, right? But most of the time, it's like, work sucked. It's done. I'm over it.
Work sucks. I know.
I'm home now. I can enjoy... things like making sweet love to my wife or something like that, you know?
You wish.
Ew, gross.
So most of the scenes in this, I think, were there for a reason. The only one I didn't understand was the Asian guy that she met.
Her high school friend?
Yes. And, Midwesterner Asian guy?
And then you find out later that he was just kind of a creep.
Right.
I mean, he was being kind of creepy. That
had, he was there just, was no he, reason. I don't think he was being creepy. I think he was making the moves on an old friend.
Did you not hear the other part? What? Where she's on the phone with the other woman in the hotel. She's in the hotel room, Frances McDormand. She's talking to another friend, and she says, oh, yeah, I hung out with Mike, and it's terrible to hear about his wife. You know, she died of leukemia. She's like, who? And she said the wife's name, and she was like, no, she's alive and well. They were never married. In fact, he was bothering her so much that she had to get away from him. So he's just creeping on girls who went to high school.
I missed that part. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So that is weird.
He was just creeping on chicks that he went to high school with.
But what does this add to the story?
Why I don't know. That's why I brought it up because it was just probably. And also, it was interesting that he still had an like Asian accent with a Midwestern accent. It was great. So weird.
I loved it.
I think it's supposed to show something to do with her character and how she's loyal to what she's doing. She's fully pregnant. And then when she's like, I'm married, I don't want really it. How does he not realize that most people who are that pregnant have a significant other. At least you would ask about
that.
Yeah,
but right? Even if you're interested,
it's your cousin.
Even if you're interested, isn't that a deal breaker? I mean, it's bad enough when they have kids, but when she's 7 months pregnant, when you see her.
Hey. You can't knock her up a second.
He tries to sit next to her at one point.
It's right.
And she's like, you can sit over there.
But even this.
Her comeback was great, too, when he's like, oh, I'm sorry. She's like, no, I just don't want to have to keep turning my head.
Well, maybe that's what it's to show is her temperament. Right. That she, no matter what situation she's in, she keeps a level head. Because that was a situation where she could have been like, no, I got to get out of here.
Sure, that she can still handle it. Yeah. Right. But see, even in those circumstances, she still does. That's why I think as far as the year, I don't know what came out, but I think she did an amazing job as far as acting.
I guess that's the crazy thing about acting sometimes. If someone can do, when someone is so good, it almost like they become that character.
Sure.
And that's what makes them a good actor, but you don't even realize that they're acting their ass off because they're doing it so well.
Yeah.
William H. Macy was good in this. I think he's better in Shameless in terms of him taking over a character and becoming, for me now, William H. Macy is that character from Shameless. He's not, I don't think of this character for him, but he's still great in it. He's great. He's just a great actor all around.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. And of course, Steve Buscemi
to me is always Steve Buscemi in movies.
It's great. And there's some movies where he's more caring he can play a sensitive role. He can play, of course, he's always comedic relief, but he's also good at being a fucking scumbag and like an action guy.
Oh, he's definitely, kind of and a villain, yeah. Great.
In Con Air, he's fantastic.
He got the worst end of the stick in this movie. He got fucked up over anybody else.
He's lucky he didn't get shot in the face and die, but he gets shot and it grazes him and it forms a fucking like cavern in his face. It's brutal.
Right. And prior to that, Shep shows up and whips the shit out of him with a belt. Yeah,
why did he do that? Just because he got him back in trouble?
Yeah. Cause he blew his cover basically. So, but yeah, he got the shit beat out of him by Shep and then immediately afterward, but then ends up killing the father-in-law. And really, it almost seems like everybody dies.
To be there. Because everyone in this movie is overstepping or not planning. Except for Frances McDormand. Yes. She's got her shit together. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, William H. Macy starts this whole story off and then immediately tries to back out of it. Can't get a hold of them.
Right.
And then when he's finally in it, he's trying to figure it out and he's kind of scrambling. And then the father wants to jump in because he doesn't believe in William Meade. They never say he doesn't like him, but you can tell that there is a father-in-law, I don't like you, you're whatever.
Right.
So when he's just like, you're not involved, and he's like, fuck you, I'm involved, he gets killed for it. If he wasn't involved at all, he would be fine.
Yeah, I don't think I can't blame the father-in-law because there is something shiesty about his character in this. There's something that's kind of weaselly that you're like, I don't know if I trust this guy.
He's a car salesman.
Exactly.
Exactly.
that's all you needed to say. One of the first
scenes you see in the beginning is him promising, it's already happened, but a guy comes in to buy a car and it's $500 more, and he's pissed off about it. And William H. Macy straight up lies to the guy and then gets the guy to spend $400 more. It's making him seem like he got a deal.
Right. And he's like, you fucking fuckhead.
Yeah, he's like, fuck. And like, he swears at him. He like builds it
up. He's like, I'm really fucking pissed.
But he is kind of he's a scumbag, and that's like his job. He goes home. His wife is fine. She's nice enough. His kid is not getting.
You didn't feel like she deserved it in any way.
No.
She was a sweetheart. She's cooking dinner.
Yeah. She seemed like a good mom, just a good, normal Midwestern gal.
Shit, if anything, I would have had him kidnap the fucking kid. The kid was a little turd. He was going to, you could tell he was going to grow up to be a little fucker.
Well, yeah, that's because he was his grandfather's, like, protégé, golden child. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
This guy.
Oh, yeah. And then, so, as this movie goes along, right, shit starts unwinding, and then Peter Stormare's character kind of just has enough. Because Steve Buscemi comes home after, so they go to make the deal, because Steve Buscemi's like, I've had enough of this, I want the fucking money right now, after he gets his ass kicked by Shep. Mm-hmm. And then the father runs, because the father's on the other end of the phone too, goes to the place with
Steve
a gun.
Steve Buscemi's taking care of all of this. He's while the other guy's just sitting watching the
sitting
wife.
Sitting
watching the wife who's
watching television and eating microwavable dinner.
Which is weird, because like, I'm curious how Shemp called them, right? Called, but he only probably called one. Why was there two guys involved? Why couldn't Steve Buscemi handle this on his own?
Because he needed somebody to watch her while someone collected the money.
Yeah, it seems like a two-person job. I don't think you could kidnap somebody on your own.
I mean, obviously Peter Stormare is the muscle.
Yeah.
And Steve Buscemi is the bag handler. But
why would you have the muscle sitting at home?
Exactly. That's what I don't understand about this either.
Because I also think he has no temperament. He is calm or killing. So I don't... They're not
cut
out for
the job. He just doesn't have the personality to be the money guy.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. But anyway, so...
Also, I don't think Steve Buscemi wanted him to be the money guy. He didn't think he was going to give him his money and just take off.
Steve Buscemi shows up to get the money. It's not William H. Macy. It's the father. And he's like, who the fuck are you? You know what? Fuck this. I've had enough. Give me the fucking money. And the father's like, where's my daughter? He goes, you know what? Fuck you. He shoots the father. While the father's holding his belly, he pulls out a gun. And that's when Steve Buscemi gets shot. He takes the money. Kills the father. Goes home.
He unloads the whole gun
at him. Gun at him. Gets to the house. Is the wife dead at this point?
Yeah.
Peter Stormare. It doesn't really show.
First, Steve Buscemi takes all of the money and only pulls out the 80 grand that they were promised and buries the rest of it so he can come back and get it later.
Yeah, because it was $1 million apparently in that suitcase. Because
he upped it after getting beat up. Then goes to home, or the place that they're staying, and he's like, fuck you, man. He goes off on Peter Stormare's character, which I don't know his name in this.
No, I don't remember either.
And then he gets axed up. He straight up hatchet mans him.
Oh, man.
And then the famous scene where... And so she, like I said earlier, she's doing good police work. She literally stumbles upon this car. She's just driving around.
She's not.
Peter Stormare's character's name is Geir Grimsrund.
Oh, gosh.
No wonder why I couldn't remember. But she kind of is like, I think I found the car. And she goes there, and then you hear a grinding.
No, she doesn't randomly. That guy that was just sweeping his driveway goes, oh, they said, you know, they were looking for some ladies because they're real lonely at the lake house. So that's why she was driving near the lake house.
She took a drive by the lake.
Yeah.
That's what, I'm going around the lake just to check it out. Oh, I found it. Call backup, whatever. And then you hear a grinding, and she's kind of like has her gun on. She's like, and then you see Peter Stormare grinding a leg in a wood chipper
with a sock still on
with
it.
A sock, sock and shoe still on, I think, too. And it's just blood red, deep red, like it's brutal. Like when I say the gore,
it's
in this
a cherry
movie,
snow cone.
Yeah. And it's funny because that scene's funny because she walks up and she's like, "Please freeze!" And he's just like, he can't hear it because it's so loud. Yeah. She has to say it like four times, and then he like looks up and she's like,
"Points at her hat."
Yeah. He throws a log at her. Yeah. A log that he's stuffing the leg down with. And then he gets shot. It doesn't.
Just in his leg.
Just in his leg.
Were $99.99.
They were.
He hits the snow.
And you see in 1996.
And it's like written with the black, like, you know, like oil pen.
Pencil
or whatever. Yeah. It's just $99.99. I was like, those things were $100
wow.
in 1996.
Yeah, those Thinsulate boots. In order to survive those Minnesotan winters, you need those kind of shoes.
Yeah.
I was like, man.
Yeah, it was all snow the entire time.
I love movies that take place in the, like when the whole movie's just it's snowing the whole movie. Like, those movies are great to me. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just because I like the snow and I enjoy
the
it.
Weird
like,
thing
there's
is
the juxtaposition of it. There's
yeah.
The,
yeah, but like it's all like, it's almost the same like a desert movie. They have the same feel
but
to them.
I don't like a desert movie.
You
I
don't?
Think no.
I've heard, it's the I've desolateness heard if you are a movie maker, there's nothing worse and more a pain in the ass than making a movie in the snow.
Oh, I'm sure.
So if you
maybe
film,
what about underwater?
No, well, so film a scene
yeah, like the
underwater for sure, right? But if you film a scene and then someone fucks up their line 2 minutes into the scene, now you need to clear all the prints out of the way, start over, make it look fresh like it was never there. Every
like, do
scene,
you know what a pain what in the pain ass in the Little ass. Mermaid was? Man.
The cartoon?
Get the fuck out of here. Why are you even part of this podcast?
What are you talking about?
Jesus Christ. Because it's hard to find shells to fit those titties? But yeah, no, I love movies in the snow. Like, Four Brothers, like that was a great movie in the snow. 30 Days and Night,
Dead Snow.
In the snow. There's just so many movies. That,
Jack Frost. That,
Which one, Michael Keaton, Jack Frost?
No.
Yes.
The one that takes place in Snowmington.
Every Christmas movie.
Snowmington. Fuck. That
Jack Frost
bad.
Takes place in Snowmington.
It's a terrible
God.
Movie.
And you wonder why I'm in the podcast.
I love that movie. Well, after your picks, we're going to get into some deep shit soon, because I know
have
about,
you guys had enough?
I don't know about Brandon, but I'm going to pick some fucking, I'm going culty after this, after watching
four of your movies.
Four
what?
Of your movies
I'm
in
sorry,
a row, I'm
you
making you
Pink
suffer.
You picked Pink Flamingos, so yes. I, that's pretty culty.
Nah, I'm going corny culty.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going, actually I say that, but I honestly think I might do stay more mainstream, because I do want to talk about certain movies.
Oh. 50 Shades of Grey too.
Maybe.
Did you say, what is it, 50 Shades Grayer?
No, New Magic Mike is in the theaters right now, guys.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. It is?
The last of the Man. Franchise.
Triple X?
And what guess what? Spoiler alert, apparently he quits dancing.
No, he goes into porn. That's why it's called Triple X.
Is it?
Oh, I don't fucking know.
I hope.
Can we just can we predict it and make our own movie up for what happens?
Absolutely.
So,
Tatum is addicted to heroin.
Has there been anything like Fargo since Fargo has come out? Wow,
cummed out.
It means wow. You've orgasmed so much you can't even come anymore.
Cummed out. I have cummed out. Done.
Tapped out. I've cummed out.
That's a lot of cum.
Yeah.
My balls are dehydrated.
You know what? I've never been cummed out, but I can give it a shot. See what can
happen. Literally.
I've definitely had days off of school in like high school where I've definitely...
Like, whew, I'm dehydrated. I gotta why did you just drink a gallon of water?
Brandon, it's a snow day. Why aren't you out making a snowman?
I'm making a snowman in my room.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God. He's like, because I love movies with snow.
He's real drippy. Real
so has there been another movie like this? I say No Country is close. Not in terms of snow, but in terms of...
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
In terms of snow.
Not in terms of snow. Thanks, Tim.
Well, yeah, but in terms of...
Has there been a snowier movie than Fargo?
What are you talking about? I don't understand why you're laughing so hard.
Just a movie that's similar to Fargo, and you're like, not in terms of snowiness. And I'm like, I don't know.
Not in terms of, like, the weather, which is a big part of this movie, but in terms of a situation happening in a small town with an older... Or a person that's experienced handling it. Yeah, there has been. That's what I take out of this movie. I don't take the snow.
It is a crime movie more than anything else. But as far as like a depiction of a certain type of person in a certain region that really you don't see on screen very often.
No Country for Old Men. Yeah. With that's that to me, where you get a bad guy in an area where people just aren't used to that, and they're so like nice going people, and that. They're not used to a ruthless motherfucker.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, there are sometimes, but not many. And I think that's what sets this apart.
I'm trying to think of any movies that have come out in the last, you know, 30 years.
I can't think of anything that I saw and it reminded me of Fargo. That I was like, God, this reminds me of it.
That are like, I'm trying to think of movies that are even like similar in like a small town crooks type situation, you know?
I mean,
like,
Blue Velvet's not far from it because you have a lot of people dipping their toes in places they're not supposed to be. It's Lynchian almost in terms of the characters are so weird. That's why, I mean, not in the weirdness of Lynch, but in the fact that every character in this movie is a character that you remember.
Right.
And they all have their own quirks. They're very, it's very Twin Peaks.
Cool beers.
Right? I feel like that's also just a Coen Brothers thing too. It is. Very similar.
Honestly, I think the only other accent that I remember is Drop Dead Gorgeous. That's the only other time where you hear something like this on screen.
That was a Minnesota accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
So. But, of course, that's a completely different type of movie than this. But, yeah, I think that's the only one that I can remember off the top of my head. So, also, of course, Minneapolis, because there were some scenes that took place in Minneapolis. Can you guys explain why there was a Prince logo in the credits?
So, it was the fucking redheaded kid that looked like the kid from The Big Green in Sandlot that was driving the car. That got shot in the back. That was his name. It was an artist formerly known as Prince looking.
Oh my gosh. Logo. How weird.
And I don't know. I almost wish I could fucking Google it, but I can't. You can't Google it.
You
can
IMDb it.
I could Google Lens the fucking actual.
Yeah, you can't image, type that. How do you type that?
But yeah.
You can IMDb and see who got shot and see what his name is.
Oh my gosh.
I looked and it's not even really coming up. Oh, victim of the field, J. Todd Anderson.
Oh. So weird.
While you're doing that, so I'm thinking of this movie right now, right? And it's like, it's such a strange movie in the fact that, like, it's a murder mystery, but the way it's all accidental, the way everything happens, it seems there's nothing planned out in this movie. There's nothing.
It's not a murder mystery, because it's not like you don't know who, you're right. It's not a whodunit.
You're right, it's not a whodunit, but I guess I'm saying from the cop's point of view, that's the murder mystery part. Mm. Going through the, you know, tracking it down. It's just such an odd movie, and I honestly don't know how I like it, right, before I'm to show my hand, but I don't know if I love it, because it's, I don't leave this movie thinking about it.
Mm.
I don't, it's like, okay, I'm done, and I think that's why, after watching it all those years, the only thing I remember is the wood chipper scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the accents.
Right.
We don't know what this was up against for the Academy Awards, but do you think this is Academy Award caliber movie?
Yeah, I remember at the time when it came out, I do remember it being very unique for its time, and people, this was super well received.
I remember
when
my people dad went and saw it,
everyone loved this movie. They were like, dude, have you seen Fargo? It's fucking awesome and hilarious and crazy.
96.
And then, but the problem is you, if you look at it, I guess not this one, not this Blu-ray cover, but the initial Fargo poster was literally just a person with, like, nothing. It was just the road with snow. So you had no idea what to expect, right? Like, you looked at it and you're like, what is this movie about? It didn't look interesting.
No, I agree. It was like, it came out at a weird time. It was, you know, it was, I don't know, it's very...
Can you Google what beat it at the Academy Awards?
Guys, you know, I'm already on that.
Oh, okay. I thought you were down more of a rabbit hole for some reason.
yeah, it's very interesting. It's. I don't know if it's one of a kind, but it's definitely in a league of its own. And I'm only saying it's not one of a kind because I don't want to say that and be like, oh yeah, a week later I think of something that's extremely similar to it. But I think at the time it was highly original, and for that reason. And it's also, it's a good movie. The characters, and it's funny, and dark comedies have always been a thing, but also not in the mainstream like this. I mean, I just looked up Pulp Fiction, that came out 2 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
Similar in the fact of the dark humor that happens, where like a guy can get killed, or in this, there's the scene where the girl gets kidnapped, they let her out, and she's blind, you know, bag over her head, and she's just running around, they're laughing at her because she's falling down, she's acting a fool, and it's the levity in such bad situations that we're laughing at somebody who's kidnapped, freaking out. It's not funny to her.
Right, right. Because, you know, she's fearing for her life. Yeah. That's what I think was so well depicted in this was, the ridiculousness of certain scenes or even goriness of certain scenes. And immediately after that, it would go straight back to this odd mundaneness.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And that's what made it so interesting was because the extreme scenes were unexpected as far as the monotone level that the rest of the movie kind of carried.
So I'm going to name off the nominees
Brandon, you're not doing it right. And the nominees are...
Yeah, go for it.
And the nominees are for 1997's Academy Awards. You've got... Jerry Maguire.
Oh.
Secrets and Lies. Fargo.
Fuck, Secrets and
Lies. Shine. And The English Patient.
Which
one do you think won?
I know what one.
Do you? What one?
The English Patient.
Shine.
You're correct.
Oh. Shine was good.
I would have, if I heard that, I would have thought Jerry Maguire. But it was
the English remember Patient. The English Patient won. Patient won. Only because I was like, what the fuck is The English Patient?
Yeah.
And same with half of those.
It's
movies.
A patient that's English.
Yeah,
Ross. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Academy likes movies that are like fancy pants movies that like no one else fucking
yeah.
does sometimes.
Yeah.
Some of the other nominees in other categories that were
they love up there. White people with English accent movies.
People versus Larry Flint came out that year. Sling Blade.
But see, that's what's sad is like
Marvin's Room.
Fucking Marvin's Room.
Primal Fear, Ghost of Mississippi.
Oh, Marvin's Room is with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mirror Has Two Faces, The Crucible. These were all movies that were out, that were nominated.
But see, those wouldn't categories. Be nominated for Best Picture, just certain acting, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
Yeah, or visual. It's probably Trainspotting got a visual nod.
Best screenplay was Sling Blade.
Yeah. Trainspotting probably got Best Soundtrack. I love that soundtrack.
Best screenplay written directly for the screen was Fargo. Best screenplay based on material previously produced or published was Sling Blade.
Oh, random interesting.
Was Coen Brothers, right?
Yep.
They did Raising Arizona. What was the other one that we all talked about earlier that we don't love but everyone else did?
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski. Is that prior or?
That's after.
After this?
After Fargo.
Does that follow it up?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's after Fargo.
So, okay, so that's a good follow-up, I guess. More comedy than it is.
See, and it's weird because when I think, I'm more of a Kingpin fan than a Big Lebowski fan.
I mean,
duh.
I don't, yeah.
But Kingpin's more slapsticky. It's got slapstick.
It's bowling.
Yeah.
It's like, as far as bowling movies, I'm like, a Kingpin wins every time. I'll fight you for
what
that.
What are other bowling movies? That's another one that is probably in a league of its own, or if not damn close.
Well, that's a baseball movie.
Yes. With Tom Hanks.
Yes.
The longest pee ever in that movie. Hanks pees a lot in movies. But yeah, there's not very many bowling movies, but that's because I think they did it and they were
riveting
like,
about bowling.
We can't beat this. Why are we going to try to do it? This movie's fantastic. Have you seen Bill Murray's hair in that movie?
Yeah.
And then I read also, I know we're talking about Fargo, but when they were filming Kingpin, Bill Murray at the end of the movie has to blow 3 strikes in a row to win. And he did that for real life in front of all those people. And
they went nuts.
So that all happening, and there's no cut, there's no CGI or anything. That's awesome. He nailed 3 strikes.
Interesting.
Which is awesome.
So you saying that, I just want to say at the very beginning of this film, it says that this is based on true events.
Oh, I do apparently like it.
Apparently, in 2016, the Coen brothers confirmed none of that is true.
Love it.
And that they did it just to set a tone for the film before.
I love the opening, that opening, because the way it's written is basically the names have been changed for the survivors.
Yeah.
To protect the survivors. But the deceased, it's all true.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I just like the way...
But apparently none of that was true.
Great. So if you are driving down a road, and you're driving and you come across a car parked, a guy holding a cop, a bloody cop like this, do you slow down to 5 miles an hour and go...
Yes.
And look, no. I go, shit, and then I don't stop. because
they didn't until they hit
well,
the ice.
Well, he almost he slows down so slow. And
people
like,
do it for fender benders, Tim.
I know that people are idiots. The if I see a guy,
freeways back up just so people can look at the fucking accident.
I understand that. My point is, people suck. If I see a guy getting dragged, I none of my business. Keep
but
it moving.
It's also in the middle. It's what it was like 2 something in the morning. They said, wouldn't you? Yeah. Wouldn't you? If you're driving at 2 something in the morning down a desolate highway. And then you are coming up and you're like, there's
like
a car.
It's a desolate back road. It's not necessarily like a massive highway where people are flying.
Right.
It's like a farm road.
But like, when you're driving and you see, and you're probably doing 50 miles an hour clip going down a road like that in the middle of the night, no one around. And you see cars, one being a state trooper and one being a car parked on the side of the road. And as you get closer, you go, am I seeing what the fuck I'm seeing? You're going to slow down because you're going
to... I think it's human nature to do it.
Instinctually, you're gonna take your foot off the gas or you're going to tap the brake and be like, what the fuck is... Oh, and then when you see what's going on, you go, fuck that, I'm out of here.
To me, it just seemed like he slowed down to the point where he was like, oh. And like,
I mean, he did, yes.
Framed and like
that
almost...
That scene did kind of kick off the rest of the movie, because once he saw that there was witnesses, the fact that he jumped in the driver's seat and fucking went after them, and they spun off the road, and the guy had gotten out of the car, shot him in the back, and then he goes over to the car and sees the broad still alive and just fucking shoots her in the face, and you're like, okay. So that's it, like, kicked off the tone of the rest of the movie. You're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, it is.
The action in this movie was awesome.
Yeah, I agree. The action and the comedy, right? It's not, there wasn't very many parts that were trying to be funny that did not hit.
Uh-huh.
All the comedy hits, the action hits, the gore hits. That gunshot, there's when he shoots the cop and it spurts, it's almost like Kill Bill level of where it's like, is that realistic?
Right.
But I didn't care. I liked it for that.
And the best was when she went over to go look at the cop after she looked at the bite, like the two randomly that were killed off the side of the road, goes over to the cop and she goes, oh, House, man, he looks like a good guy.
Yeah. And the best is she bends over, she's on the other side of the car, the flipped over car, and the other cop is just standing there with two coffees like, hey, I don't know, he's got the one coffee, and he's just like, hey, how's everything going over there? Everything look good? Hey? And then she, like, bends over, and he's like, oh, did you find something? And it looks like she's looking at something on the ground. She goes, nope, just think I'm going to vomit.
Gonna barf. So, throughout all of this, right, she's great. She's a good human being, a good cop, a good mother. She's not a mother yet, but she's going to be a good mother. I can just guess that. Good wife. William H. Macy's character. None of this happens if it's if not for him.
No.
And the ripping off this, he's such a sleazeball kind of person that never really owns up to any of his mistakes. And to the point where even at the end, they catch him running away.
Right.
Because he just... So... Yeah, his wife, who he loved, his wife, but he wanted to do this, like, just don't hurt or whatever. She's dead. He ruined families, and he ruined all this just because he was a shitty scumbag car salesman.
Yeah.
It's insane.
He
pulled that thread, and it just took everything.
Yeah, he put Steve Buscemi in a grinder, man.
Yes,
it's true.
I would like to see, and I don't know if they did this in the show. I don't think it's related, but I don't know the show. But like a prequel of their story. How did Steve Buscemi and Peter Stormare, they never worked together, but how did they come together for this?
Yeah.
Who called them to let them know? Or if Shep called Steve Buscemi's character, how did he get a hold of Peter Stormare's character to get a hold of...
To be honest.
Well, Shep called a guy he knew, and the guy he knew... Hook him up with these two.
Yeah,
I think
they worked for some sort of.
They were in prison together, is what I think. No, I think they were in prison together.
But then it doesn't seem like that because they're splitting the money. If they worked for a kingpin, that guy would getting a cut. They never talk about. At least Steve Buscemi doesn't talk about. But the boss wants this or this. It seems like they are for hired guns.
Yeah.
Right.
But also.
But it would be cool to see a story.
Yeah, he does go to Shep. He's like, "Hey, do you have another number? Because I can't get a hold of him." And there's that conversation. He's like, well, I talked to the guy that you recommended. And then there was the other guy. He's like, well, I can vouch for the one guy, but I don't know the other guy. So I can't vouch for him. Like,
so they're talking about Steve Buscemi being the guy.
Steve Buscemi is the one that Shep hooked him up with.
So I'm curious how Steve Buscemi and Peter Stormare's characters hooked themselves.
Yeah.
Who did Steve Buscemi call? Who did this? I just like their characters a lot. Because even Steve Buscemi, he's funny the whole time. Yeah. He's literally, from the beginning, the guy's like, I want pancakes. Right. Like, we just fucking have pancakes. We're going to go here. He's like, fine. He goes, but let's go here. I could use a shot, a beer, and let's go to this town and we'll get laid. and then he's just like, but I want pancakes. He's like, oh, we'll get you some fucking food for it, obviously. Yeah. But then we're going to get laid after that.
See, and I, Shep seemed interesting. He was so quiet and just seemed like this simple Native American guy that was, you know, a mechanic at the dealership. And that fight scene, he whips everyone's fucking ass. Yeah. He even kicks the prostitute, like kicks her in the ass down the hall.
Yeah.
he whips the shit out of everybody.
The black dude comes knocking on the door. Hey, can you keep it down? He opens up the door and he just fucking whoof.
Yeah.
And
throws him into the wall. He fucked everybody up. He
had narcotic problems, right? Because then the cops say that to him when he catches him.
I'm sure.
She's like, you're clean now, but in your past has this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Because
unfortunately, that's a stereotype of Native Americans. It's just, you know, it's just...
But yeah, it's very interesting of a movie. Did they ever say the time of year this takes place?
Obviously winter.
I know that, but like early winter, late winter. It's not around Christmas. It's not a Christmas
movie. Yeah, no, it's not a Christmas. Not a Christmas movie.
I'm going to say January, if I was to guess.
Okay.
It's probably the snowiest time of year in Fargo.
It could be around now, too. It could be Valentine's. I don't know.
I'm sure they get more snow than that.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, there's a cold front moving in, eh?
Cold. Getting cold tomorrow, eh?
I keep saying A like they're Canadian. They're not close enough.
So would you guys recommend Fargo to anybody that hasn't seen Fargo?
Definitely. Of course.
It's definitely worth a watch, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. The acting is good. Maybe not everybody. I don't think... Only because
it's... Could you not appreciate because in this?
It is bloody, right? And there might be some people who might be...
Your nieces would be fine watching.
It's not a kid. I think of a kid of a certain age. Maybe like a teenager.
Oh, I don't think a kid could follow the storyline of this. They'd be like, what's going on?
It's simple, but it's also the way it's portrayed seems like it's a lot.
Well, also kids these days are...
But like, yeah, if you like an action movie, you would like this movie. If you like a comedy, you would like this movie.
If you like horror and gore, like you would like this movie.
Yeah, the gore in this... Yeah, it's... So this...
If you like independent films, this is up your alley, too. It hits all points for any genre.
It is kind of independent, even though it's not, but it has an independent feel to it. Yeah. Even if you just like good character studies, right? This has that,
I think. Movies, independent. So
we talk about horror a lot because Brandon and I both love horror.
Horrors? We love horrors.
Yeah, that too.
So did Steve Buscemi and...
But the... What hurts a horror movie sometimes, like Brain Dead, is it's so overloaded with gore that sometimes the less is more. And this movie has that.
Right.
It's
agree.
Not a lot, but when it does happen, it's so shocking almost.
And I think that's No Country for Old Men too, same thing. When it happened, you were like, fuck, so that was nuts.
But then you risk what a lot of other movies do when they try to... Where it gives you nothing except for one incident, and that for 2 minutes it's intense and the rest is boring.
Oh, sure.
That happens a lot in movies where, you know what I mean? Nothing movies where one incident happens. This is not that. For sure, recommended absolutely for me.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I think it's great. I think I like all the characters in this movie. There's not one character where I'm like,
we could have done without Well, that except one. For, just the random... High school Asian guy. That's even the him, only but random.
Even,
I'm like,
but
what?
Even him in that scene was hilarious.
It was.
So and it was uncomfortable. Yeah. And it was like, this is funny.
Yeah. Even when he like broke down, he's like, I'm just so lonely.
Yeah.
Oh.
But like,
even on the worst characters in this movie, you kind of like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I forever will love Steve Buscemi.
I agree.
I would get him tattooed on my ass. That's how much.
Honestly,
I love him.
Every actor in this movie is also well liked actors.
Mm-hmm.
Even her husband, who's not a big actor, everything I've seen him in, he's great in.
Yeah.
Everybody.
But he plays that guy. He plays the guy that's forgettable. You know, the guy that the guy that you work with, and you're like, God, I can never remember his name. Mm-hmm. What's that guy's name?
Yeah, yeah.
That's who that actor always plays, is that character.
Absolutely.
Oh, with the husband.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's John Carroll Lynch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's the guy that's like, what is his name, Mike or John? Yeah. What is it?
And it's funny because he's been like in so many fucking movies, absolutely. But he's never played MTV like shows. A big role.
Right.
He's like a character actor. I think he plays a serial killer in that Manhunter TV show that's on Netflix.
He was
Mindhunter?
Mindhunter.
Mindhunter's great. Yeah, it didn't get picked up for a third season, but it's that show is fantastic.
I think he was also, wasn't he in Law and Order too?
Probably.
SVU.
Everybody has been in Law and Order. Yeah,
probably. But like
Ice-T has been in Law and Order
for years. But yeah, he's always that guy. He's always like, oh, he's that guy. He's playing the security guard at the building. Right. You know, you know, shit like that. He's always
what
like,
did Tim
that.
Say? Oh, Kevin from the Office.
He does look like Kevin.
He's literally a cross between Kevin from the Office and fucking
Paul Scheer.
Literally, if they put the two of them together, they had a baby. That's what he would look like.
Oh,
just better teeth.
All right, are you guys ready to rate?
Ready to rave?
Yeah. Deep, 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 deep.
No, it's Sunday. Oh,
sorry.
Go ahead. I don't know. I'm trying to think of my score because it's a tough one.
Well, yeah, let's go with Brandon because you thought you had seen this, but apparently this is your first time. So.
I am a Fargo virgin. My cherry has been popped. I will go with a, I'll go with a 7. I think it was,
what? That's funny.
No, I'll go with a 7. I think it was,
for snowiness?
Yes. Yes. 7 inches of snow.
Is this better
not
than...
Not to be confused with the, rapper Snow from...
Informer?
Prior to this, yes. No, I'll give it a 7 because I do think it was a very good movie. Do I think it was fucking amazing and I would recommend it to everyone? No. But it was definitely got me with the funny bone. It got me with the gore, which is awesome. And I think all like the action was cool. I think it was all around just a really well-made movie and I really, really enjoyed it.
I laughed because you gave Cocaine Bear at the beginning of this a 7.
A 7. Oh, and I'm like,
to me, these movies are far apart.
Yeah, but they're different movies.
I know.
Do you understand how the rating system works?
Not yours.
Yours isn't much different.
I don't disagree with Tim. Yours is weird, too.
I know. We all are a little... All right. I, for seeing this in the past and rewatching it, and 96, it's coming up on... What, 20, 30 years of this movie?
It'll be 30
years. 30 years. Yeah. And it still holds up and it doesn't feel like an older movie. It doesn't feel like you can show... I think we can wheel watch this in 20 years.
Did anything date this film for you?
Just the signs and maybe the RVs and wherever they're... Yeah,
all of the Cutlasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't...
The cars, the signs
on the... Were
those
even 90s cars? It seemed like this might have been... Oh, they were?
Or 90s Cutlasses.
Okay, okay.
But those things that... You can't get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, the way that people act and the way that everything happens in this is relatable and yet also not. Because it's like a... But like the family life of it is relatable, even if it is simpleton. I'm going to go pretty high on my score here because I do think it was so good and well executed, well acted. I'm going to go 9. Like I said, every time it was funny, it wasn't giggle funny. It's very funny when it's gory.
That's pretty high for you, actually.
It is, but because now that I think of it, it's like, she's great. William H. Macy's great. Not only is their acting good, their character's well-written story. It is a bit of, kind of like I said earlier, where like I'm like, things happen, but nothing seems to be like a monumental thing that happened. It wasn't like a murder. It wasn't around a murder or wasn't around a bank heist. It's a fake situation that turned real.
Uh-huh.
But that in itself is funny. And everything, when things happen in it, they're not afraid to go all in. So they weren't afraid to go all in on the comedy. They weren't afraid to go all in on the gore. They weren't afraid to go all in on the accents. So 9 because... And for, I do think it's a rewatchable movie, and that says something.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I'm just throwing this in here because I think it's interesting. 1996 was the last year that the Cutlass Sierra was made. From 82 to 86, or to 82 to 96 it was made. And I'm wondering if it's kind of a nod to the car.
Because that was movie. All that and was in...
Maybe.
Because literally, like, every single car in this
movie. Were the what? Cop cars cutlasses, no. too?
Are they oh, put okay. in the snow?
No. Probably I can't terrible. Imagine
Well, then why does everyone drive in them in this fucking movie? Where it's no snowy everywhere. No one
drives
everywhere.
A truck in
this movie. Yeah, no, there's not a single Jeep in this movie. No, not a single Subaru, not a Jeep.
The only thing I can think of is maybe there it was... I'm looking to see where the assembly lines are, and there's none in
Minnesota
or Dakota. So I have no idea.
Oh,
God. Maybe they were built there, you know?
Maybe they were there, a producer of the movie.
Yeah.
They sponsored Mark. I am going to give it an 8. I think it's casted so well. And then also my only comparison, which for Tim was problematic, was Drop Dead Gorgeous, where the writing, they tried too hard to be funny. This didn't. It didn't try as hard, but hit so much better. And it the writing is well executed. And this movie catapulted Frances McDormand. Like, oh, after this, sure. She became a household name. People knew who she was. She won the
Academy Award.
Well, but people didn't know who she was before. They were like, who is she? You know, and she's not your typical lead actress face. She's not a stunningly gorgeous, huge titty, big booty kind of gal.
Honestly, like, you made a point that catapulted her. I think it catapulted everyone involved. The Coen brothers went from Raising Arizona to Big Lebowski and then growing farther after that. William H. Macy starts in this and then his career goes where that goes.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi,
he's been in a lot, but if you were to list top 5 Steve Buscemi roles, this is his most, one of the more memorable
No, I ones. Thought Reservoir Dogs was like, didn't that throw him into the spotlight?
I mean, the spotlight for Steve.
Big Daddy, Mr. Deeds, but
all of them. But like, he's also never really a leading person in his movie. He's always the really guy, amazing. Another guy.
Oh.
Right?
Happy Gilmore.
I don't know. And then, you know, we watch Adam Boardwalk Sandler. Empire. He's the lead in that. He does a great job.
But that's 20 years after Fargo.
Oh, sure,
And, you know.
And that the interesting thing is, they're not young, but I looked at them in this and they all look baby-faced me. Yeah. Even though they must have been in their 30s or 40s doing this film, and they still look young to me compared to now, which is so weird. I agree.
Everybody looks older in this. Even, Frances McDormand doesn't look... She's probably playing someone in her late 20s in this, I'm assuming. No. Especially if she's pregnant.
Really?
For their first child. Right?
Her There's husband no child at had home. A terrible
They look, but I think that they're playing, I don't know if this shows their ages, and doesn't really matter. But if they were in their 40s, you would think that they would already have a family. But to get to the
position that she was in, I think she was either chief or lieutenant. You're not in your 20s. You have some kind of, you know.
Maybe. But they look 40s. Experience. And I don't think they're that old.
Yeah.
So Steve Buscemi was 39.
I believe it.
He was our age. My age.
I believe it. Yeah. But yeah, this is a good pick, Alana.
Yay! You're welcome, guys.
It's well recommended. I mean, we've said it before. Well recommended. Not only by us.
Two movies before she picks another
one. No. But it's also like, it's one of those movies that when the Academy Award puts it up, it's so hard to look at the Academy Awards and be like, they pick good movies every time. But because they put out a list of movies that they say are good, it's almost like we're like, all right, I guess I'll check it out, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this movie was recognized, and it still is a good movie. It's one of those few, like a Pulp Fiction or something like that, that came along and changed, and the Academy had to reward it or recognize it.
It was undeniable.
It was undeniable. But it wasn't like An English Patient, where I don't want to watch that movie.
No.
I don't want to watch Shakespeare in Love or any of these fucking movies that I'm like, I don't need to see this fucking stupid shit.
But you love comedies.
Well, they're not made for you, Tim. They're made for women.
So are tampons.
Yeah.
And you guys aren't like historical buffs, you know? No, I go back and I watch, you know, period pieces a lot. And you guys don't.
It depends on what it is.
Yeah. And Tim's not a big fan of periods, so.
No. No, at all. I love horror. I hate what's called hammer horror, because it is very period piece. It's in castles. It has zero relatability. It's very dry. Zero relatability. So period pieces, when I look at them, and it's just like, oh, just a bunch of people floating around with their fucking fake.
But you guys like Interview with the Vampire?
Yeah, I like that. That movie's sick.
All right. Well, we have been the Boozy Floozies for movies.
Darn tootin', darn tootin', we have been.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's green, hun.
All right, bye.